Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
This episode is sponsored by Section 8 Rentals Made Easy. For years, Section 8 Rentals have been one of the best ways to make money in real estate, but most people overlook the program because they've never had a guide show them how to easily navigate the system and get paid. In this ebook, you will learn how to make your property available for Section 8, how to pass the inspection, and how to get paychecks rolling in like clockwork. Visit Section8RentalsMadeEasy.com or click the link in the show notes to get your copy today.
So you want to start a podcast, huh? Well, we got something to help you. The Black Real Estate Dialogue brings you the How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience ebook and webinar bundle.
We are controlling transmission.
Come and put info into action as we show you the step-by-step process to sharing your successful podcast on a budget. This bundle is full of the exact details, social media hacks, and podcasting process we've used to gain 13,000 downloads and over 10,000 Instagram followers. But that's not all. As a bonus, you'll receive the exact super trackers we use to stay organized and free access to our private Facebook group designed to help you execute. Make sure you click that link now because there is an audience for you to reach. The How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience, the ebook and webinar bundle presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive? Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out of state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real-life case studies, and so much more in bonus content.
Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access?
My goodness! If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience. Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is?
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, what's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 3 times a month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to gumroad.com/bread. That's gumroad.com/BRED. It's the Real Estate Investing Community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 62. A couple quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. First, don't forget to like, share, subscribe, and leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening to this on. This will greatly help us move up in the rankings and also reach more people. Also, if you'd like to get the latest updates on what's happening at the Black Real Estate Dialogue, text BRED to 21,000 to join our free VIP text list. If you'd like to gain early access to episodes, bonus content, discounts on merch, and more, join our Patreon program. Visit patreon.com/blackrealestatedialogue to join or visit the link in the show notes. If you did not have an opportunity to tune in last week, I'm going to repeat this announcement for this week. We just launched our website. I'm so excited about it. All the resources, everything you need, all the information you need can be found at our website, and that's blackrealestatedialogue.com. The link is in the show notes as well. Let me know what you think. We are so excited about this project and launching our website. This episode we're about to have right now was full of pure game. This is one of the most inspirational episodes that I can ever recall recording. I was super pumped up after this interview, so I'm really excited for y'all to dig in and learn all about KR and his real estate investing journey. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Here with me, I have KR out of New York City. KR, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me. I love the content you guys are putting out. So this is going to be fun. I'm ready to get this party started.
Definitely. So KR, the first thing I'd just love to learn some more about, if you could tell us about your childhood, what your childhood was like, and just as a kid, what you saw or maybe what you didn't see that ultimately shaped your view of what it means to build wealth.
So when I was younger, I grew up in a single family, single parent household. My mother raising seven children. We moved from place to place. We had financial insecurity. And what really stuck with me is that we were on welfare. For people that don't know what that is, it's like your EBT cards that you go around running around with some of the young people nowadays. And I remember the landlord always telling us rent is supposed to be due here. And I remember one time our house burned down and an elementary teacher brought over a bucket of KFC, original chicken, which I love. She had mac and cheese and she had potato salad, but mashed potatoes. But I was like, what the hell? I'm a coleslaw guy. But I remember that vividly because I can look on the third floor and you can see the stars. The third floor was missing. We were basically homeless. And from that moment, I had a burning desire in my heart to achieve financial wealth and also financial freedom and never be in a situation where I had to live in abject poverty. So that was like when I was like 5, 6, or 7, I remember those days. And I had said, you know what, I'm going to become something better than what my relatives were. So I remember busting my behind off, going to public school throughout Philly and seeing some of my siblings get pregnant at a young age or go to jail and things of that nature. And I just said, look, I'm going to buckle down, believe in myself and come up with a game plan. So I became really focused and graduated from University City High School, public high school, school president, class president, debate captain, track, did some football. And Bowdoin College rewarded me for my hard work. So I got a full scholarship to go to school in Maine and study history and English. And throughout the summers, I explored the finance food chain. So when I was growing up in Philly, what was interesting was that we moved around the whole city. So I tell people I have a PhD in being a renter. So I know exactly how to think like a renter. And what I did is I went off to Wall Street and to corporate America to figure out how to think like a businessman. So I wanted to marry those two different worlds. But growing up in Philly, I can see the gentrification about to take place in West Philly around University City and in Temple University around that area. And from there, I start saying, you know what? Once I get some money, when I turn 18 or 20, I'm coming back and I'm buying a whole block. So that's how it started for me.
Definitely. A couple of things in there. You know, obviously you grew up, there were a lot of challenges and things that you and your family experienced. You probably had every reason to go in a different direction. But, you know, I think it's commendable that you decided to go in the direction that you chose, and you said you want to come back and buy everything. Did you learn that from somewhere? Like, where, as a kid or a young adult, like, where did that even come from, that mentality? Were you exposed to something like that, or was it just kind of innate?
No, like, you know, I think it was kind of like part of it was innate, like it wasn't taught or anything like that. Because my siblings at a young age, they weren't focused on business. So I was always like trying to figure out the local church that I went to. They always were raising money, building funds or what have you. And also like the local businesses, they were like a Big George on 52nd and Spruce. And that was a Bill Clinton ate there and everything. But that restaurant went down. And also like the church was always struggling. So it's like these people have a big heart and everything, but they didn't understand financial management. And so when I was like 14, I started reading books about wealth management, financial management and business, because I said, I have a good heart. Now I want to have this knowledge, because I think about it three ways. I think of capital. One is intellectual capital. That's what you get from going to school, having a mentor, listening to podcasts, following certain pages like yours, you get educated. Then the other one is financial capital. And that's why I wanted to work on Wall Street. I want to get a good job to start. That's the money that you earn, the money you get from your side hustle and all those different things. And then you have the social capital, which is the relationships that you build, that you can affect change in people's lives. And so that's the relationships you start having with lenders, with brokers, with various peoples, so that you can start to make a large impact. So I think when I was younger, I started to pay attention to these patterns and I start seeing that there was an issue and there was a need where people lack financial education and also didn't know money management. And also I noticed that the landlords were slumlords that we live with. So I said, look, Everybody is going to get old. Like when I walk down the street, I see a homeless person, someone's going to have to replace the homeless person. When I see the guy walk down the street, that's the landlord, someone's going to have to replace the landlord. Someone's going to have to replace the police officer. Someone's going to have to replace the teacher. I decided that I was going to replace the landlord.
Definitely, definitely. And what were your early days like on Wall Street? I would imagine there's not too many black men on Wall Street.
Oh, it was crazy. So I was at Goldman Sachs, the premier investment bank. And in my class, we had 300 people from around the world, from Australia, from China, Japan. And out of that class, this is a front office internship, like the front office full-time job. So right out of college. So I think my class probably had African-Americans, probably like five African-Americans, not including people from Africa, but African-Americans in that premier class. And it was fascinating because during this 6 weeks of training, we were working about like 70, 80 hours a week, just learning accounting, finance, what else did we learn? Debt, bonds, you name it. We learned all this intensive training in 6 weeks. And then we had the opportunity to work on deals that were billion-dollar deals. I remember one deal was a $500 million deal, and I'm only like 23 or 24, and Goldman Sachs sent me to Delaware to represent the company. No vice president, nobody else, just me there representing the company saying, hey, I'm KR, I'm representing Goldman Sachs, and I'll be answering any of your questions with a potential buyer. And it's crazy because I'm just 1 year out of college. So that job really taught me to understand mergers and acquisitions, when companies merge and when you buy companies, financing, when you do financing deals and also how to do industry work. And then that led to me getting the job to work at a $3 billion hedge fund, a long short equity hedge fund. And that was in Boston. So it was bananas. You're making good money, but the responsibility is crazy. The only time in my life I ever worked 50 hours nonstop without sleeping. So it was intense, but that prepared me for what I'm doing today and enabled me to retire really young because I learned how to work in high intense environments, build teams, processes, and systems. So that you can elevate your game and you can be in that space where you're in the flow. So that it was a crazy time. I wouldn't regret it, but it was intense.
Definitely, definitely. So let's jump back to real estate. So you had this vision, you had this goal to come back and start buying property. When did that happen? Like, tell us about like your start into real estate investing. What did that look like?
All right. So my game plan was, look, I'm poor as hell. So I got to take the job that pays the most money after college. So I went to Goldman Sachs, moved to New York, which was crazy, lived on the Upper East Side. So I'm going to work. I'm going to save so much money. So I wanted to save, you come up with a number. So I got to save a certain number. My friends were wilding out. This was 2005 to 2007 working at Goldman Sachs. And so everybody's like, yo, the market is high. This is time. Everybody getting paid. We had warm weather vacations where the firm will pay for us to go to Naples, Florida, put us up in a 5-star hotel. Then they would have surf and turf. They'll put us in the Hamptons for a weekend. The firm paid for it. We were living a life. But I was like, yo, this can't last forever. I was already poor before. So I said, I got to hold on to my little pennies. So then I got the job working at a hedge fund. I moved to Boston and I'm covering European financials, US home builders, and UK home builders. And so I'm really starting to understand how lenders look at the home builder sector, how the home builders look at the sector, and also how home buyers look at the sector. So I'm like, oh, this is nice. So I'm saving my money. And that is when you have the crisis, 2009. And so luckily for me, if you already ready, don't have to get ready. So I already had my cash. So I was waiting for the crash. So I'm like, oh, yes, come on, my time. So I bought my first foreclosed property at 3801 Market Street in Philadelphia, where they do live auctions. At this time, people are losing their jobs. Everything's falling apart. My family members are saying, boy, you crazy as hell. What the hell are you going to auction buying and everybody losing their jobs? The world's coming to an end. I said, this is when you're supposed to buy, when there's blood in the street. That's when you're supposed to go, when everybody else is fearful. You're supposed to be greedy. So I'm like, yo, I'm young. I'm not an expert. At this time, I don't have a real estate license. I said, look, I'd rather just mess up now. I'm only like 20 something, so I can bounce it back later. So I bought this house. One of my family members is going to say, oh, that's on a nice block as a foreclosed property. You can't see the inside. She said, you ain't got nothing to worry about, baby. When you get up in there, it's going to be a cakewalk. I went in that property. It was terrible. No walls, no cabinets, floors. I said, what the hell? But again, in order to be great, you have to get started. You can't be great if you don't get started. So I had my game plan for the worst, hope for the best. So I was able to fix that property up in 30 days and then rent it out. And then I decided I was going to buy individual single families, fix them up, refi, sit on a large percentage of the cash. And then I was going to convert to the apartment buildings, which is what I did. I went from one unit in 2009 to 9 single families in 2018 to 35 rental units in 2019 to 105 rental units in 2020. So that's how I stepped my game up.
Wow. Very cool. So you mentioned a couple things that I want to touch on. So one, you said, you know, you weren't an expert, you didn't know everything, but you're like, I know one thing. People are panicking. These homes are getting let go for cheap. I just got to get in and I'll figure out the rest later. And I really like that you mentioned that, because a lot of, obviously you should do due diligence. You should do all those things, right? But at a certain point, you just got to pull the trigger. And like you said, plan for the worst, hope for the best. So I think it's great that you went into it with that mentality. Cause can you imagine, what if at that time you kind of were doing what everybody else was doing and you kind of just stayed on the sidelines? You might've just stayed there forever, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's so easy. Because a lot of people say, oh, I have to be great to get started, but you have to get started to be great. So what I said is, look, I'm going to put my head down. I'm just going to buy this property. If I got to figure out how to fix it on my own, then that's where we're going to go. I do not care. I want to make this happen. And I wanted to start with the messiest, most difficult foreclosed property, because I said, then I could go backwards. So I start when it's really hard, then I start moving into now. I'd like to do easy breezy houses. Easy breezy house or apartments where it's just cover girl. We just go in there and fix that thing up, bang, bam. But that experience really helped me, and it builds that confidence to say, look, no matter what the world throws at me, I'm going to come out the corner swinging. And so that's what I was able to learn from doing that.
Definitely. And what was it like? You know, you got in there, of course, no walls, all that stuff. How, as a brand new investor, how did you navigate that? How did you eventually figure things out and get it ready in about a month?
So what the good thing about when I worked at Goldman Sachs, what I learned. So when we started, the training was so organized and seamless. It's like they could have changed the instructor no matter what. It was interchangeable. So we had a book, the Goldman Sachs valuation book, was kind of like a Bible, 300 pages. I still have it to this day. And so they handed that to each of the students that were about to start working full time. And they said, use this as a reference guide. So my training working on Wall Street and for the hedge fund taught me that, look, before you go into war, you got to have some framework for understanding stuff. And that's what we do on KJ Consulting on our IG page, is we say, look, you need to have a framework, because if you have a framework, you stack the odds in your favor to be successful. So I already started saying, all right, this is how I'm going to analyze the market, because I was a research analyst. I said, this is how I'm going to analyze the property. This is how I'm going to interact with the potential contractors and check their work. So I worked really hard about, all right, these are the questions I have to ask the contractor. This is how I'm going to check their work. So I always like to use a relationship metaphor for how a relationship analogy about how you should think about picking people you want to work with. So I did all this prep work and came up with my own little best practices book. You would think I was like buying an apartment building. I was buying one house with 3 bedrooms and a bath, but I did all this work, about 200 pages, saying, this is all the details. If this happened, I got to go this way. I got to pivot this way, pivot that way. I got to talk to all these people. And it was funny because I would interview them. They're like, how big is your project? You only got that little house. I don't know why you want to talk to us for 2 hours. You just go get somebody else. That little bit of money you got. So I think that made it so much easier to knock out that first house. And also it made it easier for me to graduate from single families to apartment buildings.
Definitely. I think that's great. You know, like, you established that framework. You were so detailed, probably to the point where people thought you were doing too much. But I'm sure just starting with that groundwork now and just that level of detail, I'm pretty sure over time it made it easier for you larger deals.
Oh, yeah. Definitely make it easier for you to go on vacation, for you to put the team together. It's just like I was talking to my property manager, who's a family member, and I said, he does a lot of work. My stepmom does the other work on property management, but we have like a one pager we give the people, and that tells you how to take care of the granite countertops, how to take care of electric glass top stove. And it's just a one pager. People don't know this stuff, but we tell you exactly how to clean it, how to maintain it, because these are my babies. I can't be just giving my children to anybody. So we want to make sure you understand what to feed them.
Definitely. So you mentioned that after that, you continue to acquire single family homes. So I guess, can you talk about like that next phase of the progression and just adding more properties?
Yep. So think about it this way. When I bought one of these properties, I bought it for like, say, $22,000, an ROE property. You buy it for $22,000 from like auctionblock.com, auction.com, and then you spend about $17,000 for rehab and materials. So we're all in at a certain amount, which is like $47,000. Now that will be $49,000. So you're at $49,000. Then you go to the bank and you refi it. They say it's valued at $115,000. So I can go and take money out. So now I have like $85,000 that the bank gave me. What you do is you do that for like 10 properties. Most people that get that $85,000, they're like wilding out, like, oh son, I gotta go buy a new car. I gotta go, did I take my girl here? I was like, no, I'm gonna keep my 9 to 5. So some people will quit and just say, I'm gonna keep doing flips and fix houses up and things that they, not me. You buy 10 of these houses and you manage to keep your costs low. After 10 of these properties, you have anywhere between $600,000 to $800,000 sitting in the bank. Because you decide to keep your cash flow, and also the cash flow is the monthly rent. You're not using that because you still have a 9 to 5. So I kept my 9 to 5 to 2020. So I'm saving all that money. You then can go out and let's say I bought a triplex, which was $195,000, but to keep it simple, $200,000. You put 30% down, that is $60,000. Remember, I said we have $600,000 over here, $600,000 over here. So we just take $60,000 from our own bank. That way I didn't have to use hard money lenders. I saved my own money. I'm able to buy that triplex. Then I bought a 12 unit complex for like $450,000. Make that easy, $500,000, and you put, let's say, 20% down. So now I just need $100,000. So then I go back to KR Bank, take $100,000 over here and buy my own apartment building. And then what you do is this bank account is keep going down. Then once you get to a certain level, you're probably only left with $100,000. Then you think about syndication. Then you go call some of your friends or you have a reputation. You say, I have $100,000, you have $100,000. Let's go buy a building together for $1,000,000. And that is how you keep majority of your ownership. And then you start to think about syndication. And that's how my evolution was.
Got it. So it seems like it's very, very methodical and very, very intentional.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't wake up like this. I had to do this and come up with a game plan. The thing about when you grow up in extreme poverty and you have that hunger, you burn that bridge that you just crossed over, there's no way going back. It's like, this is what I have to do. I don't have the option of the luxury of falling back on someone. Both my parents, biological parents, are deceased, and my grandparents. So I had to just go and duke it out. So I'm just like a regular cat that been through some hardship that said, nah, son, I ain't going back to being poor. Let me figure this out. So I came up with my own roadmap.
Definitely. So as you built your portfolio, I guess in the earlier years, obviously you still had a very demanding 9 to 5. So can you talk about how, and you also talked about the benefit of keeping it, which I think is a great thing. So can you talk about just like how you balance those two things, like just how you made sure things are continuing to progress on the real estate side, like you continue to find deals and make sure rehab is done and all that stuff?
So what was crazy is before I graduated from Bowdoin College, I spent my own money to take like an accounting course, two accounting courses outside of Bowdoin College because we didn't have accounting courses. I also spent my money in the time I'm only like 22, 23. I also spent $500 taking like a Franklin Covey course on time management because I said, look, some of these cats are going to be super sharp, smart. I got to figure out how do I manage my time? Because I always knew I wanted to be a business owner, not just just an employee. So I said, time management is very important. And in our course, we actually spent some time teaching about time management. And so from that practical experience, from taking a course, understanding like time management, knocking out the most important things, I was able to come up with a game plan for every day when I was going into work. I would say, these are four things I have to achieve, and everything else on the day is gravy. So I'll say I have to do four things. I need to talk to my stepmom, who's a property manager, or my brother. And these are people I'm training. So I'm building out my own team because I wanted to keep that 10% or 7% and don't give that to an outside party. So I would come up with the two to four things every day I had to do while I was working 9 to 5. And I said, look, even if I fell at my job, I got to make sure I knock out these two or four things and keep it very simple. And that's why in the beginning, I did not want to buy so many properties really fast. I wanted to take my time. Things done well are done soon enough. And so as you're building out that portfolio the first couple of years, you're building out that track record. and you're building those relationships. You're really spending time with all the different parties involved. And then you have the reputation that now the banks say, oh, we'll break you off with $1 million, $2 million. Last year, I did like $5 million worth of deals. And they say, KR, it's because you have that track record and you have the relationship and you have shown us that you are a skilled operator. And so that was developed over time by taking baby steps versus just running. That's why I was able to do that over that time period.
I like it. And you also mentioned just having family members help you out and not just kind of outsourcing some of those
yes.
tasks. So can you talk
about I think that's very important.
Yeah. Cause I mean,
oh, very important. So you hear people always talk about generational wealth, right? Mm-hmm. Like my children and my descendants, what they're going to inherit. Mm-hmm. I believe, and I'm telling people, we're talking about transformational wealth. And what I mean by transformational is I mean you're transferring wealth. So my brother, when he wanted to buy a house when I was in college, I gave him money towards his down payment. My other brother, he wanted to buy a house, gave him money towards a down payment. My other brother, he was doing some property management. I told him, look, you should get your real estate license, because then when we buy property, I can teach you, show you the ropes. When I do $1 million deal, you're going to get 3%. Why? We could keep the money in the neighborhood. So therefore, it's being transferred sideways, transfer, and it's transformational. So now when I get to go see him, I greet him and the whole family's happy because I'm helping put money on the table and people are not greedy. We're all going to build together. So that's what I mean by transformational wealth. And you also include them in the will, because you're like, look, when you work for the, you don't just work for the company. This is our company. This is a business. We're transforming the way we look at the world. And so also one of my aunts, she does cleaning. I said, look, why am I going outsource? You love to clean. We could start like a cleaning business collaboration. You're going to clean all the properties. I'm going to pay you in advance, a year in advance or what have you. So you know you have that income coming and I know you're going to be reliable. So people always are afraid to hire friends and family. I said, don't hire all of them. Many are called, but few are chosen. So what you have to do is figure out which ones you can work with. And I think it's very big if you're interested in transformational wealth, because once you understand transformational wealth, then I think you can understand substantial wealth. And that means that you're going to be worth anywhere between $15 million or more. We're not talking about just leaving a house for a little John and JJ for $1 million. We're talking about substantial wealth and transformational wealth.
I like it.
Today's inspirational quote is from Wilma Rudolph. Winning is great, sure. But if you are really going to do something in life, the secret is learning how to lose. Nobody goes undefeated all the time. If you can pick up after a crushing defeat and go on to win again, you are going to be a champion someday. Now, this is an excellent quote for several reasons. You know, in life, you have highlights. On social media, you have highlights, but every successful person you know or you've seen has failed a whole lot in life. So you can't let those things get you down. All you can do and what you should do is learn from those perceived failures, learn from those challenges, and keep on going. As long as you learn from it, there's a brighter day ahead.
For some reason in the Black community, we don't want to work with each other. We don't want to work, especially with family. But I think
love family.
Same. Like, I think who else can you trust? Obviously, you want to make sure they have some of a competence and they're going to be serious about what it is you're doing. But who better to trust? Who else to, provide income for, to help them take care of themselves and their own families? I mean, in my mind, it's hard
to develop. Yeah. Like my niece as well. I have a niece who's one of my interns for KJ Consulting. She said, I don't even like real estate, uncle. I said, I don't give a damn. This is about transformational wealth. I don't want you ever saying, no one ever taught me about how to be successful in real estate. No one ever taught me how to run a startup. This is your turn. This is your time. Now, you can hate me later, but you're signed up. So too bad. I'll talk to you later, boo-boo. And so that is the way I think we have to do it, because we're willing to do nonprofit work for Big Sister and all those different things, to spend time in investing in other kids that give up on our advice. Why not do that with your own family members? And so I'm really big on that. But we also have an intern that's not a family member, but I spent a lot of time trying to cultivate this idea of transformational wealth and transformational education and substantial wealth. And I think that that needs to be passed across generations and also down and up. My stepmom works for me. She's 70 something.
Definitely. So can you tell us about, I remember you mentioned you just were kind of compiling single family homes and then you kind of stepped up to apartments, I believe. So can you talk about the transition from single family to apartments?
Yes. So what I think is very, very important is before you jump around, I know they say that hole over there, you want to be a thought. I think you should just slow down, get to really know the one sector at a time. So I spend a lot of time understanding single families. So I got to see it from front, from point A to point Z. And what I mean by that, we're learning how to rehab them. I had ones that were foreclosed, short sales. I had a house burned down. I had all these different issues that I really became really good at it. And I was able to show the banks that I know how to identify these assets, refi them, and get them running out. After I did that the ninth time, and I had the money sitting aside, I was able to have a conversation with the bank and say, look, I really want to get big. Now, you know, I've been really good at these single families. I've been hitting these singles out the park. So now I want to go to the MBA. And so they're like, OK, KR, so what do you have envisioned? I said, look, here's my team. I already have a team of realtors, cleaning team, contractors. My team, we're ready. And so then we start with something small. Like I bought like a 6-unit and I bought like the triplex. And I was able to apply the best practices that I learned from over the years just doing single families. I applied it to my triplex. I applied it to my 5-unit. I applied it to my 6-unit. Those things got up and running. And once you hit it, you're like, oh, I'm hitting my stride. I have the best practices, handing out how you clean stuff. We already know how we're going to screen all the tenants. I'm like, oh, this thing is like butter now. Before it used to be like cutting a brick with a knife, but now this thing's like butter. And so I was able to transition up because I already had the team and the best practices in place and understood the market. And I also had relationships with the banks. And so I think that made my transition much easier. And now my largest one I bought, the last one was 24 unit. And so I was able to go from single when I bought one single, now I'm in a 24 lead. And it's amazing to be able to say now you're buying like close to $2 million properties and you're managing it. So we manage 85 of the properties in the Philadelphia area. We're probably one of the largest Black-owned property managers in that area. And also, I know I'm one of the largest, if not the largest, real estate landlord in Darby, which is one of the counties outside of Philly. And it's just believing in yourself and just taking a risk. But we put the best practices in place and we treat every tenant as if we're getting in a relationship, because you come in, you messing with my baby. Like you think about your children or people you love. When you see your child walk down the street, that's your heart walking down the street. When I see my apartment buildings, when I walk by, that is my heart right there. So I'm thinking about that. So I take it very seriously.
Definitely. Definitely. And one of the things that you know, I'm picking up throughout the interview and that I really appreciate, and I really want people to spend some time thinking about it. You develop expertise in one thing at a time. Like you spent a good number of years with a single family, just making sure you knew that well, you know, establishing the banking relationships, and then you kind of leveled up. A lot of people see, I guess, like the big fish or like the big piece of chicken, right? They see like that 200-300 unit building or whatever. And they want to go straight for that, not realizing that you can kind of progress your way up to that. And obviously, and you know, you're showing that it's very possible if you just kind of stick to it and just take it a step at a time.
Yeah, I agree. And I tell people, if you do what's necessary, then do what's possible, you'll find yourself doing the impossible. Again, that's if you do what's necessary, just understand what you have, your income, realize that maybe single family, whatever it is for you, do it really well, then do a little bit extra. So you want to become the property manager and the owner. So you're going to really learn all this stuff, become a master. Then before you know, you're going to do the impossible. So a lot of people would just jump to 150 units overnight, but they own very little. So my 105 units, I own over 80% of it. Wow. And so myself, I'm walking around worth millions, not 500,000, not 1 million, not 2 million, not 3 million, not 4 million, not 5 million. We're talking about big money, because you were able to be very methodical and set your transactions up in a way that you have ownership. And as we like to say, ownership is what's really going to be the key mover in the end. And so that's why I was able to move in the way I like to move. And I was just staying focused. I just got on social media last year when we launched this business, KJ Consulting, because I said, look, I could be like Ghost. You don't have to know who I am. You just know that I move when you feel me.
Definitely. Definitely. And can you talk more about the business, KJ Consulting?
Oh, yeah. So I have KJ Consulting. So the way KJ Consulting started, we have a page, KJ Consulting on IG. My business partner, Joe Mears, we were working on Wall Street in 2018 and working for the same bank. He was in New York. I was at Boston at the time. And a bunch of my coworkers had said, hey, we need to get this kid KR on the phone. He's doing something different. He has this job doing equity research, but he owns real estate and he has a framework that we could use. And so Joe was on vacation, my business partner. He was in a parking lot just listening to me talk. And he said, wow, I got to hook up with this guy. So when he got off vacation, he came up to Boston, took me out to dinner and just said, look, I want you to be my mentor. What does it cost? How do we make this work? And so I said, first of all, I got to make sure you're right. So I interviewed him, got to know him. And then I said, the next thing is I'm going to give you some assignments. So I gave him some tasks or what have you. Then he had said, look, I want to be your business partner. I want to do an equity deal with you. I said, nah, bruh, I got to date you before I marry you. And so he became one of my debt investors. And then after I interacted with him, I said, all right, we could do an equity deal. And then in 2000, so we did like a debt deal, like 2019 or what have you. 2018 was he was teaching. He bought like 16 properties with my coaching. Then 2019, he was a debt investor. Then 2020, he became one of my equity investors. And we bought like 44 units together. And then he said, look, KR, I know you're busy as hell running your cleaning business, running your property management business, being the general manager for a bunch of the managing member for a bunch of these LLCs you have. I think we should start your educational consulting business. And that's how we started KJ Consulting, where what we do is pretty much design a framework that I've been using since 2009 to help investors go from buy single families and also level up and understand how to interact and build relationships with banks, lenders, mortgage brokers, and give them a framework on how to analyze deals anywhere in the country. Because I have students who have bought in Columbus, Ohio, in Maine, in Indiana, down south. And so what we did is we came up, Joe and I spent time to analyze different markets and put together a framework that we teach. And so we do like consultations for like $199 for an hour. And we have a course this upcoming Saturday, February 20th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And it's not a one-night stand. We give you the framework, we give you the lecture, but afterwards we check on you once a month for the next 12 months because you're not going to embarrass me. So that's pretty much what we do. And then on Mondays, we do Motivational Mondays on our show, on our story. Then we do Tuesday tips and we're live at 12 p.m. on Tuesdays. And then Wednesdays, we do workout tips. And then Friday, we do financial literacy. So what we're trying to do, I'm not self-made, I'm community-based made. So my community made me. So what I want to do with KJ Consulting is create a community that can help us understand the market and grow and achieve transformational wealth. So that's primarily what we're trying to do with KJ Consulting.
I love it. And then two things you mentioned within the story, the cleaning business and also the property management business. So for those companies, is it for your rentals and also other people's rentals also as well?
Yes, there are cool. For other people rentals. So my property management company, that is KR2 management. So KR2 management is something I own 100% of my own, where we do cleaning and we do property management for my property and for other properties in the Philadelphia area. So that's one of my other little gigs.
Nice, nice. I really like the fact that you kind of, because if you think about it, right, you look back to like the first or the second property and you had, people helping you out, like your own people helping you out with the property management, with the cleaning, to grow to now, those are much larger companies at time.
Everybody's getting paid.
Yeah. Like, could you have imagined that at that time? Or at that time, you're like, you know what? I want to keep it in house and we'll see where it goes.
I always been like a visionary. And so I was like, I remember in 2018, I basically had made $85,000 a year from the 9 rentals. And now without exaggeration, I make close to $100,000 a month, once a month in rental income. And that was 2018, what I made for the whole year. Now I make way more than that for just 1 month. Wow. Thanks be to God and hard work. And so I was thinking, I always thought, I said, if I make $100,000, and with the single family, sometimes you got to pay 10% for property management. I said, do I want to give somebody $10,000 a year? I said, they can't be doing rocket science. So I thought about it and I talked to my brother and my stepmom and I said, look, imagine if this business, we can just have 3 people working or 4. Imagine if we make over $1 million a year. I said, we make over $1 million a year and we get to keep $100K in house. you know how much we be eating. You'll never have to worry about your mortgage bill. You never have to worry about your mortgage bill. So like if you have family members and they're like have mortgages, we're like, look, you just do these basic things. I'm telling you, we're going to make the system so scalable that everybody's going to be able to eat. You're going to get your hair done whenever you want. Let's just make it happen. So that's how I won them over. And I told my family members, not only are you going to eat if you're my real estate agent, you're not just going to eat by being a property manager. You're going to eat when we do deals because you're going to be my exclusive broker in the Pennsylvania area. So if I do millions of dollars worth of deals, your family's going to eat from there. Then I also do some, we have property management. We do some light rehab work. So I told my brother, look, for me, it's not about the greed. I said, look, let's have this business. You're the property manager. We have two people that always do handiwork. You're going to get like a 10 to 15% cut. I'll take 5% cut because I'm not greedy. I'm already rich. Then we go and get another family member and then they could do something. And we give the guys, make the guys feel good. They're getting 80%. Everybody's eating. It's just one another business. I get income coming another route. So that's always been the way I think about it. Because I said, how can we make this business sustainable and keep enough money in the family so people aren't upset with you when you come home from holidays? So that's how I stay connected.
Definitely. That's incredible, man. And I think also the story about your partner is amazing too, because he started as
zero.
Yeah, he started at zero. He started as a mentee who got vetted first. Then kind of progressively
owns like 60 units in 2 years. That's the other way you can level up is get with an experienced operator who takes you under their wing, because a lot of these people are very busy. So they have a lot of people saying, oh, can I do a deal with you? People don't just, when people are already at a set stage of their success, they don't care if you have 50,000. They're just going to tell you, no, I can just get them myself. I'll just wait. But he convinced me that he was a good partner. And so we went through the debt transition and equity partner, and then became business partners. And I'm very open. I tell my partner he can work with other people as well. I have other business partners. That's not Joe, because I like to keep it very transparent. And if you think you can find someone else could do it better than me, you better go try. I have no problems. I'm not competitive, but that's I'm glad you highlighted it, that the framework works regardless. I tell people regardless of race. So I have students that are Black, Native American. I have every race, Indian. I have women, all races. So it's transferable and applicable in different markets, regardless of your race. And that's how we want to do, especially as young African-American professionals, we want to create products that everybody can learn from and benefit from, regardless of their background or gender or sex.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Today's real estate definition of the day is adjustable rate mortgage. This is a mortgage that does not have a fixed interest rate. Rather, an adjustable rate mortgage can change monthly throughout the life of the loan based on the benchmark interest rate, which fluctuates based on capital market conditions. The initial interest rate is typically fixed for the first few years and then resets periodically. As an investor, you need to know what your potential risks are with this kind of mortgage. With an adjustable rate mortgage, your monthly mortgage payments could increase or decrease depending on market conditions.
And can you also, for those who may not be familiar, could you explain what a debt deal is and also what an equity deal is?
Yes. So like the way you should think about the debt deal is very similar to if you went to the bank and you had $1,000 and you wanted to get a certificate of deposit, a CD. So you loan the bank $1,000 and the bank said, we promise you at the end of the year, KR, we're going to give you 5%. So at the end of the year, you're going to get $1,000 plus $50 back. So you get $1,050. And that's pretty much it. It's like kind of like a promissory note. A debt deal will be very similar. So a debt deal could be it could be a private lender, one of your friends or someone like that, or someone you don't know. And they'll give you, let's say they can give you, it could be $1,000 too, if you want, but that's kind of small, but it may be $10,000. So you get $10,000 and you tell the person, I'm going to give you 5% interest or 7% interest. And you could pay them on a monthly basis or at the end of the year. And you sign a promissory note. It's very simple. And you say, I promise to pay you this, and this will be the interest. It's kind of the debt deals are the most simplistic. The person does not own anything. The debt deal can be used to finance your rehab, or it could be used for a down payment, and you just pay the person back from the monthly rent. The other thing is the equity deal. Now, an equity deal is different. That is like marriage. So it's like the two of you decide to put together an LLC, or the two of you decide to put your name on the deed as individuals. And that's when it gets messy, because you're making decisions. And so you might want to have an operating agreement where you say, all right, I'm the managing member. I get to make these decisions. are we both are the sharing the role of managing member, and we both have to argue about every decision. And so that's why it's really messy, because it's like getting married. Equity deals, you can't just get out of very easily. So you got to put in guidelines for how do you dissolve the membership if people decide to break it up, or how do you operate if one of you get hit by a car or something, if something happens. And so you may say, we have to divvy it up between our family members or our loved ones or something. So it can get really messy with the equity deals. But the equity deal can be structured anyway. It can be like for example, I did an equity deal where I get 75% equity and someone else gets 25%. And I'm the managing member. And then what we do is we split the profits accordingly. So if you made $100,000 that year, I get 75, they get 25. But you can decide how you want to structure it. Equity deal sometimes could be you hook up with a general contractor, and the general contractor is not putting any money up, but they're going to do all the work. They're going to fix it up and be the maintenance person. So you may give them 25% or 20%, and you keep 75 or 80% because you put the down payment up. But the general contractor, the way they add value, they're going to fix it up and they're going to use their own money and labor. So that's how you split the responsibility.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And then you also mentioned you left your 9-to-5 last year. Is that right?
Yes. I retired. I planned it and retired on August 31st, 2020.
Wow. And how old do you feel?
And then I,
don't me asking.
Oh, how old? Oh, yeah. This year I turned 38.
Wow. So at 37, you permanently retired. That's incredible, man. Was it?
Yes, permanently.
Yeah. Did you plan for it to be at that time?
I planned on that time, mm-hmm. because on September 8th, 2020, I acquired 44 units that one day. And so that was the day when I turned 105 rental units. So everything was timed. If you talk to my business partner, everything was timed out. It was not by happenstance. This was all planned accordingly.
Wow.
So I gave my company like a 90-day notice or 90 or 80-day notice that I was getting ready to resign. I had it all mapped out.
Wow.
Because in 2009, I had said, if I ever come into a situation where the world is falling apart and that I can buy a lot of real estate, in 2009, I bought one unit and I said, I was pissed as hell. I said, if this ever come around in my lifetime, I'm going to go buck wild. And so that's why I bought 70 rental units last year. I said, never again. I am not letting this pass me. I got to get that substantial wealth. And that was the game changer for me.
Wow. How did it feel just to be done?
Sometimes I tell my family it's crazy. Literally, I really shouldn't be doing cartwheels anymore, but I do sometimes. I wake up, I do a cartwheel. I just sometimes be skipping to the bank. It blows my mind to go from a point where you had shelter insecurity and financial insecurity being a young lad. And now you wake up and you're like, yo, this is crazy, son. Yo, we used to be broke as hell. This is crazy. I sometimes open up my Buildium account. It's crazy. The bank accounts and the money is just, it's crazy. And just having that ability to affect change in so many lives. So for instance, my contractors, we have a good relationship. One of my contractors said he wanted to buy his dream truck. And so he called me up. He said, KR, I know you're going to kill me. I said, what do you want, Mr. Dr. Juan? I always call my guys doctors. He's a doctor, a contractor, and have doctors of housing. And he said, I want to buy a truck. I need $10,000 from me. I said, $10,000 for what? I thought we were going to have a good conversation. This was last Friday. I told him, I said, look, I'm going to give you $10,000, but this is the reasons why I need you to do these certain assignments. So fix like a few apartments and what have you. I said, I'm going to pay you 4 weeks in advance because I'm in a position that I can help you achieve your dreams. And I know that you will keep your word and you will help me achieve my dreams. So I mentioned that story because that's how it makes me feel. That I have the ability to wake up and write those checks to help people change their own lives and not necessarily just be so greedy. But it's crazy. It's a crazy feeling. It's so, I don't even know what to do sometimes. I'm like, man, if I don't do nothing else, I'm good, son. Y'all can do what y'all want to do.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful feeling.
Man, that's crazy. Like 11 years.
Yes.
11 years. Yes.
11 years. Incredible. Changed my whole life. It is what's really crazy is like, if you go to my page, KJ Consulting, is that I never imagined that my name will be on a building. So like two of my buildings, my 12 unit is KR Apartments and my wow. 6 unit is KR Apartments. And every time when I drive by and look at them, I always say, yo, that's crazy. My name is on the building. And my brother says, of course you put it up there. I said, oh yeah, thanks for reminding me. but it's just crazy because we came from some hard times. Now he has a beautiful home in Abington, has a beautiful wife, a 4-bedroom. We came from nothing. So as some people like to say, we came from the mud. So yeah. Now it's a crazy opportunity just to sit back and enjoy that time with your loved ones and wake up and do whatever you want and set up businesses that helps other people achieve financial freedom as well. So my business partner, he still works for his job. And I told him not to quit because I want him to get to a certain level that the game will switch up for him. Because a lot of people you hear on social media are talking about, oh yeah, I'm making this amount of money from having, I don't know how you got jets and you got a fancy car and you only got 10 rentals. Come on now. You know the cash flows are not sick like that. Now you're in the 100 range that, oh, now your cash flows are starting to be really sick. Then you really can be balling out of control. So, but my business partner is doing well, but I just like to help people understand, be realistic in your expectations and put your head down. If you do what's necessary, then do what's possible. You'll find yourself doing the impossible. I used to say when I was in high school, I'm going to retire at 45. So I beat that goal a couple of years in advance. So it's pretty dope.
Definitely. Definitely. That's incredible. And you also mentioned last year you acquired 70 units, I believe.
70. Yeah.
So can you talk about like some of those deals? Because I mean, that's quite a ramp up, you know, and especially considering everything else happening last year. So could you just talk us through some of those, or maybe like your favorite couple deals?
I think I would talk about, there were so many, it was super busy. And it's because if you're ready, you don't have to get ready. So yeah. I was just waiting for the world to fall apart. I said, I can't wait. Because the thing I say, you got to have those three R's. So the first thing is you got to have a track record. So everybody know, the bank, professionals, they all know that you're serious and that you're a skilled operator. So that when that happens, people say, okay, he got a track record, so we trust him. Then you want to have those relationships with the banks, with the contractors, with the mortgage brokers. So then you get the best, you're privy to the best deals. And so once you have that track record, you have those relationships, then you have this reputation. So I have the reputation of getting stuff done. And so once you have that reputation, then people are going to call you and say, look, someone called me last week, said, look, we got a 13 unit for you. Someone's going through a divorce. They bought it for $670. The wife, they called me before. The wife says she'll sell it for $645. The husband is pissed, but they're going through a divorce. And look, I'm probably going to be able to win. It's probably worth $700 and something. So, but you won't get those calls if you don't have the reputation. So for instance, last year, the properties I have in Harrisburg, we have an outside property manager for Harrisburg. I manage the ones in the Philadelphia area. And so I owned at the time one unit in Harrisburg because a deal came up, and I accept blessings from everywhere. If you're going to give me a deal, basically a house for a dollar, then I'll take it and fix it. It could be in Alaska or in the North Pole or in your imagination. I might come and do something like Freddy Krueger. And so I bought this one property, but my property manager, I told him, always call me if you have something in the Harrisburg area. They say, look, KR, we have a 14 unit building for you. And so it was a 14 unit, 13 units you live in, and one unit is a restaurant unit. And it was, we got it for $675,000. The owner bought it for like $680,000 2 years ago. He's having a child. He wants to get out of business. So I love these situations where you're going through something, distress situation. It can be personal or it can be the building. So he just wanted to get out of the situation. He's going to pay a prepayment penalty because he didn't keep it long enough. So I said, we went back and forth. I eventually got him down to 675. I was able to buy that property with a 6 unit that I bought in Dretzel Hill for like 550. So we did a deal for like 1.2 million. My bank, because of my reputation and my relationship, I was able to only put 20% down. Wow. And the interest rate that I got was fixed was 3.19%, which is really crazy on an apartment complex.
Wow.
And what I love about that deal is that, and this is what we teach in a course, is that when you think about these deals, some people would say, why would you buy an apartment building that has a restaurant? Restaurants have been closed. What we did is we want to be very thoughtful. And so we're going to make sure before we close, I said, look, tell the restaurant tenant they have to sign a 5-year lease and they have to pay for their rent 6 to 12 months in advance before. So when I buy it, I needed to be enough money. We agreed on like 6 months. We said 12, we agreed on 6 months in advance. And we are going to also put in measures like 2% increase or what have you. You want to put those things in place because you want to make sure that you are secured, because that one restaurant can make up like 20% of your revenue. So you want to make sure you have that in place. You also want to analyze what the restaurant is doing. Even though they can't serve food, have they been serving alcoholic beverages? And they have. And that's been helpful. They actually have opened back up. So you want to actually get to see what the financials are for that restaurant, potentially, if you're going to do the deal. The other 13 units, it was a good deal. It's like in, I think, Midtown or downtown Harrisburg, really good overall deal. The building was in good shape. But you want to think about the deal, not just necessarily in the numbers, but you also want to think about the personalities, because sometimes it could be a pain in the butt with that big tenant leaving. That's 20% of your money that just left the door. So we spent time really understanding that restaurant tenant. And when you buy apartment buildings, you're buying the leases, and the building is just the icing on the cake. So I say that because you want to make sure that you have flexibility in those leases to get rid of people or be able to increase the rent or what have you. And you can ask for those leases to be worked if they're on a month-to-month basis, if you're getting ready to sell. Because what happens is that sometimes the leases, they're written with a clause saying that if we're selling a property, if the seller is selling a property, that the leases are going to expire. They turn a month to month. So if you're smart, you'll write your leases in a way that gives you a lot of flexibility to sell it to the next owner. So that deal, I think, was an amazing deal where we're able to buy that apartment complex basically for the price that it was purchased 2 years ago. And it appraised much higher and it's fully occupied. And then what we do is we go in and we're going to make it cost efficient. What I mean by that is we're going to basically replace, like, make it water efficient. You're going to replace faucets, toilets, all those different things, shower heads, put the LED lights, change the water heaters, do our damn thing. And that's how you really make money with these apartment buildings. It's like they say, once you go black, you can't go back. It's like, once you go to the apartment buildings, it's hard to fall back. It's crazy. Because you get to control so many different levers and just little changes like $50 rent increase across the board, $20 saving here and there. By the end of the year, you increase the value $20,000, $50,000. Like the guy who sold me the 24 unit, I think he created $800,000 in value in 2 years. Wow. And then he put it in a 1031 exchange and put it somewhere else. So when I go and do the math with my team and I'm like, in 5 years, yo, this is going to be crazy. I might not even want partners anymore. This is a wrap. We done. IG, I love y'all. We done. I'm going to just go and do talks at churches. I'm done. Yeah. But it's been a wild run.
Definitely, definitely. Man, that's incredible. So are most of your properties either in the Philadelphia area or other parts of Pennsylvania?
So my properties, primarily my business partner, he has like 16 properties in Indiana.
Okay.
I own 105 in the Pennsylvania area. So 85 are in the Philadelphia area and then 20 are in Harrisburg. So what happened is initially we started with just Philly with 8 units, but then I start seeing opportunities on the outskirts of Philly as well. So I got the 8 unit in Philly, 8 single families, and then I have a 5 unit apartment building in the Northeast. And then I bought a 12 unit apartment building in Darby. Then I bought a 6 unit apartment building in Darby. And now we have the 24 unit apartment building in Darby, and we have 6 unit in Drexel Hill, 12 unit in Clifton Heights. And then we have the 3 unit in Lansdowne. We have a 9 unit in Lansdowne. So we just lock and loaded. We're just running. We run in full force. And now we're just trying to get everything into my system, in the KJ consulting system, because we buy buildings that are already occupied. So now we have to train all the tenants to think the way we think. And you either, if you can't pay, you can't stay. I'm not a church. It's not a charity. I can pray for you, but I can't pay for you.
Yeah, definitely. Man, this has been a really, really great interview. I think there are a lot of things that stand out, but the one thing that keeps going through my mind is, you know, 2009 happened, right? The world was in despair. There's a whole lot of things happening. But thankfully you were prepared. But not only that, you know, you started with one house.
Yes.
You started with one house, and 11 years later, you have 105 units and
crazy.
Fired from your job at the age of 37 last year.
Yes, crazy.
So I think it's just great just to see it. Like, you stayed down, you know, you didn't just jump and leave the 9 to 5, you know. That's like the popular thing to do on social media now. It's like, oh, quit your job, like your boss, quit. But on the other side, you could stick with something you could reasonably deal with as you build the wealth step by step.
Yes.
Delay that gratification.
That means all that money on the side from all those rehabs and flips, our rental income is just stacking in your bank account. And then you're going to really be able to take and pull the trigger. Because imagine if I had to work for, if I had to be a full-time entrepreneur, then I can't save all that money for those big, when I bought my first apartment buildings, I didn't have other, the big one, the 12 unit for 450, that was all me. The 6 unit, that was all me. The 5 unit, that was all me. The triplex, that was all me. And what happens is that you have a lot of the ownership because you save so much money. You don't have to split that. I'm like, nah, son, that's all me right there. Those checks come to me. And then you could do syndication. But I think that delayed gratification is so important. And I think a lot of people don't speak to it. So I tell my business partner, I want him to stay in the game, keep working for a couple more years, because I want you to be, get to a point where you have financial freedom, but you have enough of your own significant wealth that you're not just, some people on social media, they're so busy trying to be entrepreneurs and trying to come up with multiple ways to make money. I want to do a mentorship. Talk to me every 5 days. I want to do this. I want to do that. I'm like, look, I'm trying to figure this out, squeeze it into my schedule because I got so many other things that make me so much more money. This is my way to give back that I want to do it, but I can't like be talking all day. I tell people I don't talk for my health. If I want to get healthy, I'll go work out or change my diet. Yeah. So, but I think it's very possible. Like people like me and you, if we put our head down and we come up with a strategy, like you don't necessarily have to invest in Philly. You can invest anywhere in the country. Figure out what your budget is. Be realistic. Analyze the market. Get a really good coach. So what we do pretty much at KJ Consulting is everybody, you know how to throw, you know how to run, and you know how to catch. My job as a coach is to teach you how to throw better. To teach you how to catch, become a better catcher, and to teach you how to be a better runner. So a lot of people have so much raw talent. You may already bought 8 units, but you've never had a coach. You don't have frameworks. So I went to Ivy League school, got my MBA. I worked on Wall Street. I have my real estate license. I've run my own business from single family units to apartment buildings, from the scene from A to Z. So when you have someone with that much knowledge, they can help you take your game to the next level. And so a lot of people out here, I don't get it. They teach you credit when their credit score is bad. If you go to my page, you can see I just posted. I got an 800 or something. So you trying to learn credit from people that don't even understand credit. Come on now. You got to check the receipts. Yep. You don't even have to see my receipts, just see my buildings. And so I think that the key is that for us, we got to connect with people who are real practitioners and who really take a deep interest in your development. So if you are supposed to be my coach, if you don't respond to my calls and DMs now, I don't know how it's going to go when we get in bed and have to do deals together. And when life get really real, because you ain't even treat me right now. And I tell people I work hard for my money, so you better treat me right.
Definitely. Just out of curiosity, do you still own some of those single family homes that you started with?
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. It's so hard to come up with a good idea. I'm never selling them. I've never sold a property that I bought in my life, and I don't plan to.
Yeah.
Yep. So the same property I bought from six, it was in on Catherine Street and West Philly. I bought that property, and then I set it by the block. So now on the block Catherine, I own 3 houses on a block, 2 on the 62nd block and 2 on the 61st, 1 on the 61st block. But I told him I was going to buy the block. It was so beautiful. And so I own all of them. And the reason why I own all of them is because with the single families, and if they're in your name, you actually get higher cash flows because you can get a 30-year lease, a 30-year mortgage. So you're going to get a lower interest rate and a longer-term mortgage, which you're going to benefit from. And all you have to do is get regular insurance and then get an umbrella insurance to protect yourself. And then the apartment buildings are in my LLC. I bought 5 single families because the deal was hot, and I could have given that to my partners. But I said, oh, hell no. 5 houses right next to each other, $185,000 in Harrisburg, and they were all rented. I said, no, KR, keeping that in-house because the cash on cash returns like 50%. I ain't sharing that. So I primarily don't do single families, but I still own 16 of them. I've never flipped in my life, and I've never used hard money lenders either.
Yeah, definitely. So where can people access all the information, connect with you, be part of your program, buy the courses, all social media, all that good stuff? Where can people access all that information?
So the number one way to contact me and my team is KJ Consulting, KAYJAYCONSULTING. So that's KJ Consulting on our IG page. click the link in our bio, and that will take you to our website where you can subscribe, and we will update you. We put out investor letters about what we're doing, so you can see real time we're changing things. And you also could sign up for our course, which is $349. That's the discount price. That's going to be on Saturday, February 20th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And on our page, like I was saying earlier, we do Motivational Mondays. We do Tuesday tips. We do 12 p.m. live chat. We do our Workout Wednesday tip, and we do Financial Literacy on Fridays. And on our page is very dynamic. You're going to get real concrete stuff about how to fix individual houses and apartment buildings, how to manage them. Also, our great books, great reading. So look, we're coming at you with some really good content, and I hope you guys tune in, because for me, I really believe I'm community-based. That's how I'm community-built. I want to build a community so that we can leverage each other and put out that real content that's practical. I'm not trying to feed you any fibs or any fake things or get rich quick. That's not my thing. And if you don't sign up, I still love you because I'm already rich. But that's a joke. But it would be nice for you to sign up, because I think it'll take your game to the next level. But because I'm having so much fun, for the first 5 viewers on this call that sign up for my course on Saturday, I will give you a 30 minutes free consultation. You get to ask me any questions you want. The first 5 people that sign up out of your follower base when you post this.
Awesome. Appreciate it, man. Any other parting words, any other advice or tips you want to leave with the listeners before we wrap?
I think the number one thing people should do is keep life simple. I love K-I-S-S-S. Keep it simple, smart. And what I mean by that is figure out what are the three, let's say the three podcasts or the three real estate gurus or educational leaders or thought leaders you want to follow. And dig deep, and also figure out what your interest is. If you're going to be a single family guy, you're going to be an apartment building guy, figure out what it takes and dig really, really deep, become an expert. And if you really want to be successful in real estate, it takes 2 of 3 things. 1, it takes knowledge, or 2, it takes money, or 3, it takes grit. Again, you only need 2 to 3. That's knowledge, money, or grit. When I first started, I didn't have the money, and I also didn't have the knowledge. So all I had is just that grit, that perseverance, that ability to work hard. So if you have that, you can build on the other 2 over time, or you can partner with other people to help you get to the next level. So that would be my parting words. And check us out on KJ Consulting. Even if you just get all the free content, I'm telling you, you will be an educated young person or an educated old person, whatever you want to be. Even you can have your dogs look at it too. They'll be educated animals.
Definitely, man. I appreciate you coming on the show. I can't wait to put this out. I can't wait to play it back. It was a lot of inspiration and a lot of game. And, you know, just shows the power of staying down, sticking with the plan, and planning things out properly. So, KR, I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Anytime. I hope you guys follow us too. We're following you guys, and I hope you guys have me back. I had so much fun. I love to update you guys.
Definitely. Thank you everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you want to keep up with what we have going on, text BRED to 21,000. Or go to our website. You can find all the resources, blackrealestatedialogue.com. Look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bred Podcast. That's BRED Podcast. Until next time. You've reached the end of the show. Thanks so much for listening. We value your time, and that's why we want to give you the best sounding, best produced quality of content we possibly can. And this podcast you've been listening to has been edited and produced by yours truly. I'm Donald the Voice. I'm a 10-year voiceover artist, narrator, and production specialist that wants to see only the best, life-giving, equipping, and long-lasting content be produced to help others. So if you have commercial, video editing, or other production needs, I'd love to talk with you. That's right. Visit DonaldTheVoice.com and hit the contact page to talk about how we can work together to bring your content to life. Okay, so you're not an email person. Well, you can also contact me on Instagram at DonaldTheVoice or on Facebook.com/Donald.TheVoice. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Well, Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. We ask that you kindly not be that guy, and instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone from their top brands in any condition on any unlimited plan for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 with Galaxy AI.
With new line on my plan, additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.